जय जय श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद जय द्वैत चंद्र जय गौरा भक्त वृंद
Reading from chapter 23, Life's Ultimate Goal, beginning with text 49. Actually, I'll begin from the previous. The permanent ecstasy becomes a more and more tasteful transcendental mellow through the mixture of special ecstasy, subordinate ecstasy, natural ecstasy and transitory ecstasy, yogurt mixed with sugar candy, black pepper, and camphor is very palatable and tasty. Similarly, when permanent ecstasy mixes with the other ecstatic symptoms, it becomes unprecedentedly tasty. There are two kinds of particular ecstasy, or vibhava. One is called the support and the other is called the awakening. The vibration of Krishna's flute is an example of the awakening. And Lord Krishna himself is an example of the support. The subordinate ecstasies are smiling, dancing, and singing, as well as different manifestations in the body. The natural ecstasies, such as being stunned, are considered among the subordinate ecstasies, or anubhava. The two-page purport. In Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, vibhava is described as follows. Quote, the cause bringing about the tasting of love for Krishna is called vibhava. Vibhava is divided into two categories, alambana, or support, and Udipana, or awakening. In the Agni Purana it is stated, quote, that which causes love for Krishna to appear is called vibhava. That which has two divisions, alambana, in which love appears, and udipana, by which love appears. In Bhaktivinoda Sindhu the following is stated about alambana. Quote, the object of love is Krishna, and the container of that love is the devotee of Krishna. Both of them are called by the learned scholars alambana, the foundations. Similarly, udipana is described. Quote, those things which awaken ecstatic love are called udipana. Mainly this awakening is made possible by the qualities and activities of Krishna, as well as by his mode of decoration and the way his hair is arranged. Quote, Krishna's smile, the fragrance of his transcendental body, his flute, bugle, ankle bells, conch shells, the marks on his feet, the place of residence, his favorite plant, tulsi, his devotees, and the observances of fasts and vows connected to his devotion all awaken the symptoms of ecstatic love. In Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, anubhava is described as follows. The many ecstatic external symptoms or bodily transformations which indicate ecstatic emotions in the mind and which are also called Udbhasvara are the anubhavas, or subordinate ecstatic expressions of love. Some of these are dancing, falling down, rolling on the ground, singing, crying very loudly, bodily contortions, loud vibrations, yawning, deep breathing, disregard for others, the frothing of saliva, mad laughter, spitting, hiccups, and other similar symptoms. All these symptoms are divided into two divisions, shita and kshepana. Singing, yawning, and so on are called shita. Dancing and bodily contortions are called kshepana. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu describes Udbhasvara as follows. Ecstatic symptoms manifest in the external body of a person in ecstatic love are called, by learned scholars, Udbhasvara. Some of these are a slackening of the belt and a dropping of clothes and hair. Others are bodily contortions, yawning, a trembling in the front portion of the nostrils, heavy breathing, hiccuping, and falling down and rolling on the ground. These are the external manifestations of emotional love. Stamba and other symptoms are described in Madhya Lila 14.167. Text 52, translation. There are other ingredients, beginning with complete despondency and jubilation. Altogether, there are 33 varieties, and when these combine, the mellow becomes very wonderful. Purport. Nirveda, Harsha, and other symptoms are explained in Madhya Lila 14.167. The transitory elements, Vyabhichari, are described in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu as follows. There are 33 transitory elements known as Vyabhichari, or ecstatic emotions. They especially wander about the permanent sentiments as assistants. They are to be known by words, by different symptoms seen in the limbs and in other parts of the body, and by the peculiar conditions of the heart. Because they set in motion the progress of permanent sentiments, they are specifically called sanchari, or impelling principles. These impelling principles rise up and fall back in the permanent sentiments of ecstatic love, like waves in an ocean of ecstasy. Consequently, they are called Vyabhichari. Translation, next text, 53. There are five transcendental mellows: neutrality, servitorship, friendship, paternal affection, and conjugal love, which is also known as the mellow of sweetness. Conjugal love exceeds all others. The position of neutrality increases up to the point where one can appreciate love of Godhead. The mellow of servitorship gradually increases to the point of spontaneous love of Godhead. After the mellow of servitorship, there are the mellows of friendship and paternal love, which increase the subordinate spontaneous love. The greatness of the love found in friends, like Subal, extends to the standard of ecstatic love of Godhead. Purport. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that the mellow of neutrality increases to simple love of Godhead. In the mellow of servitorship, love of Godhead increases beyond that to affection, counter-love, or anger based on love, love, and attachment. Similarly, the mellow of friendship increases to affection, counter-love, love, attachment, and sub-attachment. There is the same with the mellow of paternal affection, the special feature of the mellow of friendship exhibited by personalities like Subal is that it increases from fraternal affection to counter-love, to spontaneous attachment, to subordinate attachment, and finally, to the ecstasy where all the ecstatic symptoms continuously exist. Technical. Stop there. You have a question, huh? I hope I can answer it. Thank you. Well, certainly there's an attitude of servitorship. Prabhupada describes it, the position of son in relation to, or child in relation to parent, is that of service, like disciple to master. I can't think of anything further that Prabhupada has said. Any, do you want to add something to that? Don't you know? For the benefit for the kitchen, in Dwaraka, the sons of Krishna had what kind of relationship with Krishna out of those five? Practical service rendered, just like the description is there with Pradyumna, the nectar of devotion, that would, if he wanted something, whatever Krishna wanted, if he wanted something else, he would do that something else immediately, and vice versa. Thus rendering service reverentially. Here is specifically how these stages and qualities of loving ecstasy can be understood by external symptom. Sometimes he would exhibit them. Then it's not a matter of sometimes he would suppress them. Occasions when these ecstatic symptoms were exhibited in the middle of a lecture or in the middle of kirtan. So you could say, not caring for others, but that his body became inert. Exhibiting these other external symptoms.
Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Shat Trinshad Varsha Sahasram Shasha Shasha kshiti mandalam bhogai punya shayam kurvan abhogaya ashubha shayam shatrinshad varsha sahasram shashasa kshiti mandalam bhogai punyakshayam kurvan abhogar ashubhakshayam shatrinshad varsha sahasram shashasa kshiti mandalam bhogai punyakshayam kurvan abhogar ashubhakshayam shatrinshad varsha sahasram shashasa kshiti mandalam bhogai punyakshayam kurvan abhogar ashubhakshayam shashasam shashasa kshiti mandalam bhogai punyakshayam kurvan abhogai ashubhakshayam Thank you.
Chatrinshat, 36. Varsha, years. Sahasram, thousand. Sashasa, rule. Kshitimandalam, the earth planet. Bhogai, by enjoyment. Punya, of reactions of pious activities. Kshayam, diminution. Kurvan, doing. Abhogai, by austerities. Ashubha, of inauspicious reactions. Kshayam, diminution. Translation, Dhruva Maharaj ruled over this planet for 36,000 years. He diminished the reactions of pious activities by enjoyment, and by practicing austerities, he diminished inauspicious reactions. Report that Dhruva Maharaj ruled over the planet for 36,000 years means that he was present in the Satya Yuga, because in the Satya Yuga, people used to live for 100,000 years. In the next Yuga, Treta, people lived for 10,000 years. And in the next Yuga, Dvapara Yuga, for 1,000 years. In the present age, the Kali Yuga, the maximum duration of life is 100 years. With the change of yugas, the duration of life and memory, the quality of kindness, and all other good qualities diminish. There are two kinds of activities, namely pious and impious. By executing pious activities, one can gain facilities for higher material enjoyment, but due to impious activities, one has to undergo severe austerities and severe distress. However, a devotee is not interested in enjoyment or affected by distress. When he is prosperous, he knows, I am diminishing the results of my pious activities. And when he is in distress, he knows, I am diminishing the reactions of my impious activities. A devotee is not concerned with enjoyment or distress. He simply desires to execute devotional service. It is said in the Srimad Bhagavatam that devotional service should be a pratihata, unchecked by the material conditions of happiness or distress. The devotee undergoes processes of austerity, such as observing Ekadashi and similar other fasting days, and refraining from illicit sex life, intoxication, gambling, and meat eating. Thus he becomes purified from the reactions of his past impious life, and because he engages in devotional service, which is the most pious activity, he enjoys life without separate endeavor. Description we have of Dhruva Maharaj gives us the information of the very, very special devotional position that he had reached, seeing the form of the Lord face to face. Of course, this verse makes it very, very clear that this was taking place in Satya Yuga. Otherwise, inconceivable, ruling for 36,000 years. Given Dhruva's position as an exalted devotee, and given that this was the Satya Yuga, one can only imagine the auspiciousness, the degree of opulence that was being exhibited. As Dhruva stayed and ruled over the planet. Further in the verse, it indicates that the description, it makes it sound like he was finishing off his good and bad reactions. Of course, because of his being a devotee, we know that that's not possible. Even the language that's being used is that he enjoyed the reactions of pious activities, in this way diminishing them. And the impious activities, they were being counterbalanced by practicing austerities. So, given the position of Guru Maharaj, we know that this is not exactly the fact. This is what Prabhupada is describing in the purport. A devotee, by simple definition, a devotee is not concerned for these things that are temporary. This is described also by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, that the happiness and distress that arise just from sense perception, the wise person does not concern themselves with that temporary enjoyment and temporary distress. Rather, the enjoyment for the devotee is simply having the opportunity to serve the Supreme Lord. Externally, however, it may appear that there is a great situation for enjoyment. One is enjoying like anything. Guru Maharaj must have been enjoying like anything. However, even by that external point of view, the verse goes on to describe that great austerities also Guru was observing. I've just been listening to one tape. Prabhupada is explaining this about, for example, brahmachari life. He refers to the verse Tapasya Brahmachara Jaina, that the purpose of human life is to perform austerities. Of course, the purpose of those austerities is God realization, not austerities simply for austerities' sake alone. And Prabhupada goes on to describe that the brahmachari, there are so many rules and regulations that are presented. He mentions a few. For example, sleeping on the floor. The brahmachari and the sannyasi, they should perform these so many simple austerities. And there are so many rules and regulations in this particular age, Kali Yuga, very difficult to observe them all, practically impossible to observe them all. But the basis of these austerities is refraining from sex indulgence. And to accomplish that, this chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, the basic principles that Prabhupada has established, as he mentions in the purport, the four regular principles, observing fasting, rising early in the morning, just like we're hearing regularly, as we heard again this morning, right after Mangalati, rising early. This austerity is an essential austerity. One way to look at that austerity, as with any austerity, from a simple point of view, is it balances the impious tendency, the reactions to so many impious activities that we have previously performed. We must perform these basic, simple austerities. Just like not so long ago we were observing milk fast. We were discussing this amongst ourselves. How important is it to observe the milk fast? The Mahaprasadam was being brought up to the Sankirtan office for the men's Sankirtan party. And whoever was transferring the plates was sending the milk also upstairs. And somebody was taking the milk. So we're having this discussion. Is it important to observe the milk? I mean, how much of an austerity is it to observe the milk fast? But Prabhupada introduced those austerities for us. there are so many austerities that can be taken. And the basic ones that Srila Prabhupada has given us, we should observe. Once Prabhupada said, was asked, what is the quickest way to make advancement in Krishna consciousness? And Prabhupada's answer at that particular occasion was, by observing all the rules and regulations very strictly. And he added, even the little ones. Then what is the purpose for observing rules and regulations? One way, the verse is indicating, to burn up all of the impious activities, the reactions to impious activities that we perform. But actually there's a higher principle. Because what are these austerities meant for? They're meant for the pleasure of Krishna. Krishna likes to see how painstaking his devotee will be in executing service on his behalf. It is a way simply for increasing our devotion, these Kartik observances. They're very nice observances. There's one nice story about Prabhupada in this regard. Jagat Guru Maharaj, when he was working for some time in Africa, while preaching there, Prabhupada was in India, and someone in Africa had given Jagat Guru Maharaj a very large donation, specifically with the idea that he wanted him to give that money to Prabhupada, $12,000, I believe. So, after some time, Jagat Guru Maharaj went to visit Prabhupada with another devotee, and he, upon greeting Prabhupada right away, immediately gave Prabhupada that donation. And Brahmananda was at that time GBC representative for where Jagat Guru Maharaj was preaching, and Brahmananda wanted to know right away if that $12,000 or that donation could be applied towards the BBT debt. I believe it was BBT debt that South Africa had, and that was because the BBT was like Prabhupada's personal, Prabhupada made personal decisions about the BBT remittances and expenditures. And Prabhupada immediately became, stopped that idea. So no, but he went on to explain that his Guru Maharaj did the same thing actually as Prabhupada so often did, that he would create new projects for the devotees, his Gaudiya Math, to develop either temples or printing presses or so many things. There were very bold steps in preaching. Bhaktisiddhanta would create these arrangements and then have his disciples engage very vigorously in making them happen financially and managerially in every way. In this way, Prabhupada was saying that my Guru Maharaj gave this example of that a Vaishnava should always stay in poverty. Not poverty stricken, but in the sense of never accumulating. This is another instruction that Prabhupada gave, that savings should not, in fact, we just heard this in one of the letters that Maharaj reads in the morning, that savings is not a principle of how a temple operates. The temple is always operating on this other system, as we're very familiar with here in New York, of always being, you know, through the bottom of a dark hole, looking up for daylight. But this austerity is actually very good. We can take it that Krishna is arranging this for us, for our purification. Because if some other situation were there, then it would become the GBC's duty, or by some arrangement of Krishna, to again put us in a situation where we're not living comfortably. Even one may be in a situation where there is comfortable surroundings. just like you go to homes. I was shocked after going to one home program with some Indian families. The parents are very devoted. The kids don't care a fig for anything with devotion. All they know everything about every baseball player, every rock and roll group. Just like when the kids come here, there's chalk left on the chalkboard. All kinds of amazing things. It has nothing to do with Krishna, but it's written on a board. Because they're in the land of opulence, and many Indian families also undergo the same. It takes some time for them to get back to some kind of middle ground. Because being without very strong devotion, being in the midst of some position of opulence, it's very difficult to maintain. But when one is a very, very staunch devotee, like Guru Maharaj, incredibly, can't simply say staunch devotee, such an exalted devotee as Guru Maharaj, then one can, in the midst of Satya Yuga, be the emperor of the whole planet for so many thousands of years. And remain completely fixed in one's devotion to Krishna. The austerities that one accepts in relation to dealings with this material energy are those that are of devotional expression to Krishna, simply. That is our austerity. But for one who is interested in sense gratification, these austerities are at least unpalatable, if not impossible. Many of you have probably heard this many times, but this description is there of when one of Prabhupada's godbrothers went to England, and Lord Jetmund or something like that, was told what the regular principles are. And his response was, "This is not possible. I could not do this." Although supposedly religious person, elevated, lofty religious person, just not possible to perform what we consider basic austerities and basic requirements, just human life, the beginning of human life, impossible. So these rules and regulations in our Krishna consciousness movement, they're only very basic for this Kali Yuga situation that we find ourselves in. But they are sufficient, but we must observe them without any compromise, without any corners being cut, without any neglect or deviation. In this way, our enjoyment becomes the devotional enjoyment of knowing that Krishna is. It enhances our ability to think of how our service is meant for Krishna's enjoyment. It increases our devotion. Hare Krishna. Are there any comments or questions on the verse? And I want to make reference from Nectar Devotion that Archinanda produced. Yeah. No, your question. Question first. It's a question of faith. Specifically in terms of like things with prasadam, for example, or the considerations that a new person who is first coming to Krishna consciousness, there are a number of people who are now at this present time who are coming regularly to the temple, who are taking great interest in Krishna consciousness, very serious in applying themselves to chanting and reading and making their lives Krishna conscious. Progressively, the standards that will enhance their devotion, they can be applied as their conviction in Krishna consciousness increases, and as their association also increases. And yet there's a matter of practicality. So where to draw the line? It's a very general question, so I think the simplest way I can answer it is, if you have some doubt, if you're not certain, when you're not certain, ask someone who is a temple authority for their authority. It's a question of health. Those questions of health are very difficult judgments to make, isn't it? Even when it's your own health, or someone, what to speak of someone else's health. What to eat, what not to eat, what, you know, hours to keep, and so on. And there's certainly some element of faith there. At least this much, the basic rules and regulations and the chanting of rounds should not be broken. I didn't say for certain. Remember what once a devotee was in the hospital with pneumonia, and they were in those little tents for breathing, a severe condition, and they had difficulty even breathing while in the tent. And so they had to just chant their rounds within their mind, kind of, you know, moving their mouth basically, but just saying the mantra within their mind. And they asked Prabhupada about that, and Prabhupada's reply is, yes, if you can't chant, then you can whisper. If you can't whisper, then chant your rounds in your mind. If you're just sick and bad and can't move, you can still chant your rounds somehow. And just as we read yesterday, if you have a big load of devotional service, you still must chant your rounds. You must follow regular principles and other regulations as far as you can, because they're meant to increase your devotion and your devotional service. It's hard to answer that question without this particular, that particular. Is that alright? The answer is right. What's the second question? There's no time. Okay. Well, fasting is feasting, and feasting is fasting. If you take different ways to answer that, I mean, it depends on how you give as a definition what is austerity. It means acting, using your senses only for the pleasure of Krishna's senses. So Krishna enjoys, and the spiritual master enjoys, we sing every morning, the spiritual master enjoys seeing his disciples engage in worship in the temple and honoring foodstuffs offered to Krishna. had that experience last night. Did you hear? Some woman with her little kid was in the refrigerator, the walk-in refrigerator, having a little feast on the boulder. No sense of austerity. But the devotees prepare, just, you know, eating a raw cauliflower. And raw this and raw that. Whereas the devotees had such a fantastic feast yesterday. That's our austerity. I'd like to read this very quickly. There's a chapter in Nectar of Devotion entitled Reverential Devotion of Sons and Others and Other Subordinates. And just one paragraph, the first part of it. To regard Krishna as one superior is called reverential feeling. And when, in addition to this, a devotee feels that Krishna is his protector, his transcendental love for Krishna is increased, and his combined feelings are called reverential devotion. When this steady reverential devotion increases further, it is called love of Godhead and reverential devotion. Attraction and affection are two prominent symptoms of this stage. In this reverential devotional attitude, Pradyumna never talked to his father in a loud voice. In fact, he never so much as unlocked the lips of his mouth, nor did he ever show his face filled with tears. He would always glance only at the lotus feet of his father. So from your reading of this chapter, is this the first stage that's being described here? Because the chapter that follows is fraternal devotion. Yeah, it skips servitorship. Goes right from reverential to fraternal. So does this reverential indicate neutrality or servitorship? Servitorship in the mood of reverential devotion.